extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. I'm David Goss, alongside Matt Doyle and Tom Bogart. It's Andrew Wiebe is out on his 37th vacation of the summer.
Oh, boy.
Am I wrong about that?
I think you got to give Wiebe a little slack. Okay. Like, he was working long hours during the League's Cup.
Oh, no. Andrew had to work for his job. He'll be at the beach. I believe he'll be at your beach while you're here.
I got a couple bones to pick with Andrew Wiebe here. First on that like it just, he went to the beach. I thought we had a great day. He said we had a great day. The kids had fun. His wife had fun.
Kids didn't like
thought
you.
We all had fun.
Kids liked your better half.
Yeah. And
they
that's
didn't
obvious.
Like you.
No, they liked me, but they just liked her more.
Okay. Tom's
and he,
a,
so he's so he then
Tom's
he was like,
a lot of scary energy.
He's like, dude, we're gonna come down to the beach every week. I can't wait. Yo, and oh, you live in the beach town next to this? We'll go to your beach. I can't wait, man. He has not come back when I'm around. You know what he does? He waits until I leave New Jersey to go to the beach.
Well, I actually thought it was noble of you to give up your beach days to come here and fill in for him.
And then
clearly you don't think it's as fun.
I'm just saying, it's just one time it's a coincidence, and then it's like as I was on my way to Maryland this weekend, he's like, bro, going down to the Jersey Shore, are you around?
Sounds like he hit you up, man. Sounds like he tried.
Sounds like you knew I was leaving again. It's like you know how Sopranos, you have to ask for permission when you're going to the turf.
Yeah.
Like Wiebe like, wait for me to leave.
Yeah, obviously.
Like, oh, hey, I'm coming. And then how hard he was hammering the A-team bit on the open to the last show.
Yeah.
A little bit too. And maybe those two things are connected. Who knows?
Yeah. How much gabagool have you been eating on your own in front of the fridge, Sopranos style?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
But I respect it, man. It's been tough.
A lot of prosciutto, man.
A lot of prosciutto. Speaking of Leagues Cup, we had our final. First ever Leagues Cup final in this format. I think you all know. Lionel Messi won. Miami won in Nashville. But we're going to talk a ton about that. But also... Drake Callender did win. Yeah. A bear. But also, the regular season's back. So we're going to talk about what we saw this weekend. We're going to give you a little primer as we get ready for this stretch run of the season of how the playoffs are unfolding, how we think they're going to unfold. And then we've got a U.S. Open Cup semifinal to preview. We've got two matches coming up on Wednesday as the Houston Dynamo, RSL, Inter Miami, and FC Cincinnati go to battle. So it's kind of like a super hectic time. You guys all ready? Do you feel good?
I feel like I should be on vacation with Wiebe.
I was going to say, he picked a good time. Oh, there's 37 competitions to cover? Let's go. Yeah,
but, I mean, a Wiebe vacation just means that the group text blows up.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, I'm watching the kids. It's like, yeah, you're looking at your phone and sending us 37 different texts about Lucho Acosta.
And he's not
and
in front
he
of
texts
microphone.
Three words at a time. Andrew Wiebe.
Don't get me started on Andrew
The good
Wiebe.
Thing that I don't have Vibrate on my phone or like my go nuts, but Wiebe would be like, bzz, bzz, bzz,
yeah.
And then until my phone would just kind of jump
up. Every time I get a new group chat started with Wiebe, because like other people are on a show or we're doing something, immediate mute of that. Everything Andrew's in has to be muted immediately, which is why none of you can communicate with me. Anders can't get in touch with me because I've muted everything.
Even Anders directly, it's cold.
Well, because I can sense the Wiebe-ness in Anders' messages. Anders back in the director room right now. I don't
wearing
know
a suit. Probably.
I don't know that he's been in there for a while. He's got his golf gear on.
Yeah.
It's like one step above wearing a suit. Let's jump in here. Let's get into this. Leagues Cup final. We had it on Saturday night. Epic moment at Chiodas Park. You could feel the energy. I think you could feel sort of that it was obviously not a regular season game. It was something different coming up here in August. The Leagues Cup over the course of the month. I think a lot of us have been entranced by the run of Inter Miami and Lionel Messi, and it feels like it's just been from game to game. The moment they play, it's when is the next game? Everyone tuning in, everyone logging in. This one was special as well. So it finished 1-1, if you didn't watch, over the course of regular time, and then 10-9 for Inter Miami in penalty kicks, finishing on Drake Callender scoring his and then saving Elliot Panico's
Drake Callender
attempt.
Scoring his, which he took like it was a goal kick.
My
like
God,
that did not look like
pure
a
power.
Penalty. Yeah. And he roofed it.
Yep.
But that was a punt to midfield.
He's like, how'd this goal get in the way? I got no distance on that. There was a... So I think from Shooter
McGavin?
Six to 10.
On both teams.
Only Panico missed.
Yeah.
And they were better than the first five that were taken. Yeah.
Dude, and like the fullbacks who are like, again, Yedlin, I think was 10th. And like Lovitz, and it was like pinged into the upper 90. They were beautiful. It was gorgeous.
But the Lovitz one felt a bit like that of like he hit as hard as he could and it went in the corner, but I don't know that he was aiming.
Well, so you lean over and just shade to one side of the goal. And if you hit it as hard as you can, you know, you got a good chance. So like that
Tom won all those shootouts.
No, I was more finesse.
Nice.
Because I don't have the power. Like I can't take a goal kick like Drake Callender.
Do you have your side?
I like
every
to open.
Every goalkeeper in New Jersey's listening.
Yeah, I like to open my hips like I'm going to the right and close at the last.
Oh, little trick. Do you do a hop step into it?
No, I like to do so. I got the inspiration from Zidane penalty in
Yeah.
And like, where he takes in 06 final. He takes a 2-step run up
and then he puts it in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so like I can't generate that kind of power, so if the goalie goes the right way, it's tough. But
yeah,
I've sent him the wrong way every time.
I do 2 steps, and I never look up, and I don't really aim. I just hit it at the goal.
I thought you were going to say that you stand facing the other way, wait for the referee to blow the whistle
everything
as you're
you
jumping.
Need to know about how David Goss plays soccer.
I don't
all
even
guess, no break. I know one speed go.
I'm like, if I put it down and put it on frame, if they save it, it's not really
Goss
my problem.
Actually comes in and just slide tackle. Yeah.
I tried to learn the reverse foot one where when you leap, you like pretend to back kick, but you use your front foot. I tried that for a little while.
No
didn't
way.
Really work out
Are
for
you
me.
Are you kidding me?
I never did it in a game. I just did it in training like every day to see if I could get it. Yeah. It's not really my game. I'm not that tricky with what I do. But obviously a lot of the players in this were. So let's just start with the event overall. Like first ever Leagues Cup final in this format at this moment. What did you make of the night?
It was spectacular. It felt like a final. I've never had... I think it was our friend Jeff Reuter from The Athletic with Tom who said like he's never had more fun watching an MLS game or a game between two MLS teams in the month of August. And I feel the same way. There was a huge amount of pressure, but it didn't feel tight, right? It felt like two teams that
not scared to lose, but
not scared.
And
I love that. Right. So in a way it reminded me of the old Confederations Cup, which always produced the absolute best soccer because elite teams going for an international title that we all knew was not the World Cup. You know, like, okay, if you lose, you're not going to, you know, throw yourself off a cliff.
Unless Brazil had lost to the U.S. in 2009. Yeah. Maybe they
might have done that. Yeah. So it hit the sweet spot for like high stakes and great soccer. And it just like it stayed there for basically the entire month, with the exception, I think, Philly laid an egg in the semifinals.
Yeah. Which is sort of how Philly plays in big games.
Though congratulations to them for beating Monterrey and getting into CONCACAF Champions Cup next year.
When you score 16 seconds into a home game against a team that has nothing to play for, it's probably going to set up pretty well.
You're right, but like the fact that Philly have made, you know, Champions League, now Champions Cup, 3 times in 4 years, I think 4 and 5.
They've been to semi 2 of them.
Yeah, they are still building something, but we do see that they need to get the type of high-end talent in attack that can win you games like this. Now, there's only one Lionel Messi, and he's not coming to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He did come to Chester and he left. He made a mark.
Yeah.
But back to the final, it was a tactical matchup. I thought Gary Smith was brilliant. I thought that, you know, the midfield battle between Sergio Busquets and Dax McCarty was freaking awesome. Like, it was legitimately one of the best games I've ever seen Dax play. And Dax has played some great games.
Yeah, and he's phenomenal. Yeah. And it's been very consistent for a very long time. So, like, that is no light compliment. Like, that is a very high compliment.
And then Hani Mukhtar, an hour in, I was like, man, Hani hasn't done much. This is disappointing. And then I thought for the final half hour, he was arguably the best player on the field. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all of that, it culminates with that spectacular almost goal by Leo Campana on the break for literally the last kick of League's Cup in regulation. And like it was almost like even Lionel Messi is no match for MLS after dark. You know, like it felt like that was destined to be Nashville after that. But no, Leafs Cup had one more surprise for us, and it's keeper PKs after, you know, teams going 9 for 10, getting us to
also.
Can we take a step back and just say, of course, that's how the Leafs Cup final ended, yeah, with goalkeepers PKs, and like just
after Leo Campana chips the keeper. The keeper trips his own defender who's going to clear it off his line, and then Campana slips and then puts it into the
Campana
post.
Campana has to slow down because Shaq Moore is now falling into him. If Campana didn't have to slow down because Panico had tripped Shaq Moore, Campana would have gotten there.
I think Shaq Moore would have cleared it.
Maybe.
Because he's like overtaking him, except Panico takes him out. Yeah.
Like the end of Ricky Bobby, where like Ricky Bobby's running towards the finish line out of his car. It just felt like that. Just tragic.
A lot of movie references that Doyle likes.
No, I got that one.
Right.
I've seen that one.
All right.
Yeah, you said it. This is how this tournament would end. Obviously, going straight to penalties over the course of the tournament has given us... I mean, the first night we started with Vancouver Lyon going through their full teams twice to get to the end of a shootout, and then we ended up all the way here, as you said, with two keepers, a guy in Elliot Panico wearing the helmet, which means you're a PK specialist, who had come off the bench and won shootouts and now had taken over the starting role at the end of the tournament. And then he misses his shot, which is like, that's not why he's out there. He's not a PK specialist because he's good at taking them. It's because he's supposed to be good at saving them. But yeah. And then Miami
gets
to win.
These PKs were ruthless, though. Like, my God, I don't think either goalkeeper performed poor. Well, Panico, the first three, I thought he went early.
Yeah.
Okay, but like for the most part, by the time we got to like shooters 5, 6, 7,
just putting it in
they're
a
just put they go top bins every freaking time. Like the two fullbacks for Nashville, side netting.
That's why they're not shooters. They kind of like walked away being like, that's what I do. And you're like, what just happened? Because also, I think credit to Leo Campana, who shoots third.
That's right.
And
oh my God,
it was like a really ballsy attempt as well after that.
Yeah.
Where he was like, yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're not the starter right now. I don't really know that the team.
He rolled it up the middle, right, Campana?
But like late.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, yeah, like I'm going to like power it to the top. And like, even if he tries to stay, there's a chance. It was all like trying to read the keeper, mind games. Like, I'm going to shoot as late as possible. I'm not even looking. And that's like most opportunity to mess up.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, you know, pretty bold as well. So Miami wins. First trophy in club history. I think the Beckhams were crying. Not sure. There was a lot of content.
Sources.
Yeah, sources out there. It's obviously emotional. It's only took Messi a month to win one trophy. Busquets as well. Jordi Alba as well. Also, Jordi Alba shoots like eighth, but also puts it in a corner. So you're like, what is this?
I forgot about him during the
Victor
shootout.
Victor Yoa shot fifth. We didn't even get to that. Oh my God. We don't even have time. What do you make of sort of the event, the moment for this club, and like what you've seen over the last few weeks, especially in a final?
It was incredible. And look, like, we've become conditioned just throughout Lionel Messi's entire career that like the extraordinary is ordinary for him. And like, you need to take a step back. Like, there was a few doubts, not like doubts, but it's like, how quickly is this going to manifest? Like how quickly is this all going to come together? We know that he's going to be a phenomenal player in this league. Will it happen from minute one, or will it happen? Like, there was a legitimate conversation that, oh, them playing the League's Cup now is good. They'll get a couple games. He can get to fitness. He can get integrated with his new teammates, and then they'll be better set for the regular season. And no, it's like, no, we'll just be the best team in the league right now. And like, over the course of this run, we became, you know, it was normal. It's like, oh yeah, of course he scored another free kick goal at the end of the game in a huge moment. Oh, of course he scored a brace today. Oh, of course they're playing Philly, the best defensive team in the league last year, with the reigning goalkeeper of the year, reigning center back of the year, best defensive midfield in the league. Of course that they you know, run them off the field. But like, to take a step back, that wasn't a foregone conclusion at the beginning of the tournament. So just the greatness that we're watching on a day-to-day, on a game-to-game basis at this point, it makes me mad at myself that I didn't go out of my way to watch every single Barcelona game when he was there. Because like, It was on Bein Sports, and
I
like,
did. Yeah,
I didn't have, and like, I wish I was like, you're an idiot. Like, you had greatness. You could have been accessing this whenever you wanted. And it's like, what were you doing? And like, again, like, this isn't the most specific or defined or take, but like, I think it's really important to take a step back and just be like, dude, like, that's just incredible.
Yeah. Even by the Barcelona standards, even by his best moments with Argentina standards, what he just did with Miami was magical. Friend Elliot McKinley, who does great work for American Soccer Analysis, they're quants. They do stuff like expected goals and stuff that's even more advanced. This is a tweet that Elliot sent out this morning. Messi scored 10 goals from his 25 shots in Miami's League's Cup championship run. Based upon simulating those shots 1.5 million times, the probability of an average player doing this is 0.042%.
Yeah.
Messi is not an average player. It was, even by his standards, Messi does not overperform expected goals by this much, but he was touched by magic. He was magic every time he set foot on the pitch. There's maybe no better example than the goal he scored in game.
Yeah.
Because for 20 years I've been watching this guy, and he just has a knack for understanding where poor clearances are going to end up. And this wasn't a particularly poor clearance. Like, it wasn't up the middle. It landed right on his foot, and he's now in that half space just outside his zone 14 with the ball on his left foot inverted. Scariest thing in the world if you're a defender. Walker Zimmerman does the right thing.
Won the ball.
Yeah.
Tries to stop the ball. If you watch the slow-mo replay, there's a couple of good ones out there. Walker Zimmerman gets a foot on the ball and takes it off Messi's foot. Messi controls it anyway.
It's unreal.
And his touch leads him perfectly into this running one-time left-footed shot from 21 yards out. Three Nashville defenders have him bracketed. There are two others right there. Nashville did absolutely nothing wrong. Messi, no windup, upper 90, unsavable shot.
Yeah, where when you talk about that stat and you look back and it's like, yeah, there were one or two, trailers. Okay, the play is great. The finish is straightforward. But most of the goals like that are, there was one place to put it.
Yep.
Had to hit it perfectly at speed. And over the course of this month, he did that every single time.
Every time.
Which is mind-blowing. And when I saw that stat, I was like, oh, okay. So there's nothing defenders can do.
No.
If he's going to do that, if Walker Zimmerman, I felt the same way when I watched that play of like, that's the best defender in the league.
Yep.
And obviously, he's not the best defender in the world. But like, he did everything he could. And the reaction from Walker after, I think, is kind of like, looks around like, what else are we supposed to do? Maybe the support's coming a little sooner, but it's not even a clearance.
Yeah.
It was a broken play. Robert Taylor attempts a pass, and no
I thought
one's
it was
position.
A good run from Kramaski, and it was the right idea to try. I mean, it's
and
a,
the turn
it's
from
a pass,
Taylor, by the way.
Yeah,
at midfield, the he only, lays off and goes. I thought it was Messi. Seriously, I thought it was Messi, and then I was like, oh, interesting.
And then Taylor tries to thread that pass that only one player in the world can hit, and he thought he was Messi. Yeah. But it ends up,
and
with
he's
Messi
only
anyway.
Di Maria, so it's unfortunate. But like the only thing that they could have done differently on that play was the giveaway again at midfield, and like that's it was avoidable. Like, but like that happens over the course of 90 minutes. So like you can't eliminate that from your game model. So it's like you said, how much differently can they have scrambled in transition defense? They did fine, and then the ball ricochets to Messi, and still their structure is good enough at that point, and they react quickly enough. They have four players around Messi. Walker Zimmerman wins the ball, and there's still two or three players between him and the goal, and he puts it in the upper 90. Like, what more can you do?
Yeah. They fought back. Yeah.
And it was really remarkable to see how well this Nashville team played, I think, throughout this tournament. Like, they got drilled by Toluca. They gave up four goals. Toluca play wingbacks, and they blew up the diamond by making the game really, really wide. So next time out against a team that plays wingbacks, Gary Smith does something smart, plays a 3-5-2 against Cincinnati, mirrors them so that there's no advantage when they advance past Cincinnati, in penalties. Then obviously they get a bit of good fortune against Club America. Absolutely epic game there. Who was it after Club America?
They beat
Minnesota.
Monterey.
What's that?
Minnesota and Monterey.
Minnesota and Monterey, yeah. Right.
They had the murderer's row to get there.
Yep.
I will say though, when you were talking about Miami's run, a lot of what happened early was like Cruz Azul hasn't won a game. Charlotte's not a playoff team. Atlanta might become one, but the team that was on the field is not one.
Yeah. Orlando was a good win, but it was at home.
Yeah.
And then, but then you, like, we were arguing about the penalty call that was dubious. And, like, you know, there was, this was like my thoughts going into the Philly game, that there were so many, like, you could, if you wanted to go asterisk and like, oh, it was soft, or they were home.
But not
then,
anymore.
Yeah. And yeah. And it was just, then Philly, they just dominated.
Yeah.
And then at Nashville. Okay. Like, there is no other excuse.
And Nashville was the meat grinder.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Nashville was like, this looked like an MLS title contention team, where it's like, okay, you play a lot of pretty soccer. Come on, we're in banks of four. We're going to draw a line at you know, the midfield stripe. Come break us down.
Yeah.
And that was what, but then Gary Smith had tricks up his sleeve, and they pressed really high at times. Like, there was definitely like some tactical periodization in there. They switched from a banks of four. They were playing a 4-3-3 with Hani inverted a little bit, and Mawil pushed up on the right to try to pin Jordi Alba back. Like, it was, then Miami comes up and press. Nashville had two of the best press breaks I've seen in the league this season. A couple of the passing sequences, and they didn't quite turn into goals. Then obviously they do get a goal off a set piece, which was fantastic for them. But the real moment was, okay, it's 1-1. Miami's pushed up, and Hani gets on the ball in midfield and turns. And Hani now suddenly is in the open field against a retreating back line, and he's got Surridge. And he does that Hani thing, which we've seen a million times over the past couple of years, where he takes the extra touch to collapse the defense to him, and he lays it off to Surridge, and Surridge is like perfectly in stride, perfectly weighted. What a save from Drake Callender.
This is a perfect transition, because Drake Callender, his entire performance throughout the League's Cup, because it's sexy to talk about Messi or Busquets and everything else, and like for correct reasons, they don't get anywhere near the final without Drake Callender. He was phenomenal, and so I've also thought it was fitting. It was him saving a penalty and then scoring a penalty to win the League's Cup.
He kept them in the game against Cruz Azul before Messi and Busquets even arrived.
Yeah.
He then proceeded to have some big moments afterwards. The save against Gazdag, to me, is like, that game goes 1-1. I think it's completely different.
Yeah.
And it's 1v1, and he makes the save. He makes this save as well. He steps up, and this is what we talked about a bit of, like, Busquets and Messi and Alba are great, but creating a platform for, there is quality on this roster if you don't have to fill in for those spots.
So, yeah.
It's hard for Dixon Arroyo to be the midfield.
Right.
Easy for Dixon Arroyo to be a guy who blows the game up around them.
This is what we saw last year when they added Pozuelo. Now, it was slightly different personnel elsewhere, but like, you took this the bones of this Miami team and you added dollar store Messi number 10 and like they were
a playoff team.
They're a playoff team, right? And now you have a better collection of talent, but still basically the bones of last year's team, and you add the greatest player of all time and the greatest six of all time and arguably the best left back of all time, and you get this.
Yeah, and like, while this team was struggling very, very much earlier in the season, like, they have so many complementary pieces to, like, they don't have a lot of redundancies. They didn't re-sign Pozuelo because they hoped and thought they're going to get Messi, and then if they didn't, they were going to try to sign another 10. So they were like, we're not spending any money on this. They traded Bryce Duke, who could have played a little bit deeper in the midfield, but it's like, all right, if we're signing Messi
he's doing well.
But it was like, we don't need any resources on this part of the field right now. Yeah. So what they're spending their money on is Gregory, and he's going to be awesome in this group when he returns from injury soon. What they spend their money on is DeAndre Yedlin, Serhii Krzysztof, and part of the Duke trade was to get Kamal Miller. So just look around this roster. Like, they deserve even more. Like, I think that it was easy to dunk on them in the first half of the season and for all the shortcomings. And again, all of that was fair. But all of these pieces, this was a long-term plan. This wasn't just a like, oh, we signed, or like, go to Toronto last year. It's like, oh, we'll sign Insigne and Bernardeschi and figure it out. Like, no, Miami figured it out first. And then, so any team that signs Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets, and Jordi Alba, obviously you're going to get much better. This is the best case scenario.
Yeah.
And they plan for it.
So we've got a U.S. Open Cup semifinal to preview later in the show, because Inter Miami go back to work 4 days later in a semifinal at the Supporters Shield leader. Like, again, it just gets bigger and bigger. Big picture, is there anything you want to talk about with Miami for the full rest of the season that you're excited to see, that you think is huge? Is there anything that stands out?
I think we're going to touch on this again a little bit later, but I cannot wait to see the full integration of $15 million worth of U22 South American youth internationals in Tomas Aviles, Facundo Farias, and Diego Gomez. Gomez,
who do you take off the field?
That's the thing. But like, I like Gomez, I thought, has been very good, very useful. Avilas, like, it depends. You could, now they have a lot of flexibility as well, and I'm already stepping on points that I wanted to say later, but whatever, let's just do it now. That can help. There's going to be a lot of fixture congestion. There already is, and there's going to continue to be. Now, with a $7 million center back, the most expensive in league history, I think pretty easily, now you can play three at the back if you want, or you can rest Christophe. Again, but or you can make it a 3-4-2-1. And again, that takes away central midfielder, but then maybe that's when you rotate in and out. And that's when Yedlin and Alba get to get further forward. Or like, so they have so many different ways now with these three players. And that's why every team should be using the all three U22 initiative slots. And if all three of them, or well, because I think Gomez already proved that he's at least a rotational player in MLS, if not a starter right now, that if Farias and Avilas need a little bit more time, they're luxury players right now. Like, they just won that tournament without them. So I'm very excited to see how they integrate these players.
Gregory and Jean Mota.
My God, yeah.
Supposed to come back by this time.
Gregory
next
soon,
month.
I think.
Gregory is that soon.
And Mota next month is what the hope is. But like, Gregory should be. But they added him to the League's Cup roster because they thought there was a chance he might come back in the middle of August. So
let's go to the other side for Nashville. They so make good. This run, their first final in their club's history. They've obviously had early success in knockout tournaments. They've had early success in general. They've made the playoffs every year since they've come into the league. They've won a playoff game, I think, every year except last year when they lost at the LA Galaxy in the first round when they were a Western Conference team. And now they make a run to a final here. We talked about the murderer's row they went through to get there, the dramatic way they lose. What does this run mean to this club? And sort of what does it tell you about the rest of this year?
I'm not sure what it means yet. It feels like proof of concept, though, because we've always said like, oh, this roster reminds me of the old Houston Dynamo teams in a way, and the way they play, obviously, they're built for the playoffs, but they were always one piece short in attack. It was always Hani or bust. And Surridge was really, really good.
This was his first start.
He didn't score, but he was excellent. And it's not just he's a box finisher type of guy. It's like he helps them in possession. He's really good on the break. He just makes the right runs and gets into good spots. He's got good feet, good vision. So that, and then Lucas McNaughton, he had some rough moments in this tournament. You know, he had a handball, a penalty that wasn't called against Monterrey. But I thought he was very good. So suddenly they have depth now at center back. Between him and Walker Zimmerman and the milkman, Jack Mayer. They have depth at goalkeeper between Joe Willis and Panico. They have depth at D-mid between Dax Godoy and Sean Davis.
And Anungana, who they used as a starter throughout this tournament.
They have depth on the wing between Muil and Picot and Schaffelberg.
And different profiles as well in a lot of these positions.
Yeah. This looks like a team that can win MLS Cup. They were better than Miami on the night. They really were. Yeah. They're going to have to work down the stretch. I think they need home field advantage.
Yep.
It's obviously huge. We saw it last year in Los Angeles, how much it matters. They're not going to catch Cincinnati, but like they could go on the road and beat Cincinnati in the playoffs.
Right.
If they host Miami in the playoffs, I think hosting anybody in the playoffs, they would be favorites. That's the type of team this looks like now, with that level of a 10, that level of a 9, that level of a spine behind them. It's really, really good. And it's exciting. Like Nashville, you had them sixth in your watchability rankings.
Yeah.
I think they more than justified that.
Yeah.
And I think that going down the stretch here, I might have them as high as like third.
Yeah. And again, this was before Surge, and this is when it was still just the Hani Mukhtar show, and even that in and of itself, like plus the home field advantage at Jota's Park, it plays really, really well on TV. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like there's a lot to love about
that. And by the way, that home field advantage, like that was a great crowd. That was
one of the five
best crowds in MLS this year, for sure.
Yeah, that was, again, it felt like a final. And like, it was, I don't know, there's only so many different ways to say the same point, but like, I think it's worth to continue to repeat just like how special of a night that was, which is not normal for an August night in MLS, because usually we're getting through the dog days of summer. Like there's a lot of rain delays and weather delays and heat, like all of these things that seem to change, and then you're building up for the fall run. But this felt like a conference semifinal, like this was a big game, and it felt like it. And there were questions about League's Cup. What will this look like? We don't know what it's going to look like. This is the first year of this format, and it just delivered. And again, the final was the cherry on top of what was an awesome tournament.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot where there are some teams that have proven themselves in the big moments and there's trust there. And for teams that haven't, it's very hard to generate trust in over the course of the season.
Are you there with Nashville?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's what this was for me, which is like, okay, you'll have a rivalry game that's bigger, right? So, like, let's say this Columbus group. I think in a big Hell is Real game, like we saw this weekend, you're like, okay, pressure's on, and they still perform the way they perform. That's a learning moment. And that's normally really the only place you can find it, maybe Open Cup, but teams don't really take it seriously, and so they don't maybe get to the end when they're good enough. 100% with Nashville. Of proof of concept, they went to Cincinnati and got the result. At home, they man up, but blow out Minnesota. Like, they do the job.
Yep.
Yeah.
They challenge with these Liga MX clubs, and then they were toe-to-toe with Inter Miami. Surge is going to need to score just because there are going to be games where they are not, they don't have the percentage of the chances, and you'll need to score against that. But they're a threat on every.
He's got what, three goals in 180 minutes?
I'm saying he gets the start in the game. Yeah. It's like he's out. It's the only time he doesn't score is the most minutes he played.
Yeah. Right.
Which was fine. It happens. But
there's a reason the goalkeeper on the other team was the man of the match.
But
he's almost equaled Ake Loba's minutes over 18 months or however long he was here.
But you add in like the long throws too.
Yeah.
Like anytime you put the ball out in the defensive third, you're now giving up an opportunity. And that little added stress of like, do I want to clear it up the line? And then that gives you a chance to counter press and win it back. And I thought when you talked about Gary Smith, the different ways he uses Pico, Schaffelberg, and Wheel of like sometimes they're inside, sometimes they're outside. Sometimes Pico drops, pushes higher and they press out of a three. It's very creative and they don't need to change the personnel. And so they can show you a lot of different looks that they can use to win without you knowing that it's coming. Yeah. And I thought that was really impressive for Nashville. Let's dive back into the regular season then. Nashville, obviously, and Miami off this weekend, so they'll roll back into it coming up.
We're putting a bow on Leagues Cup, 10 out of 10. Can't wait for next year, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a scale of Matt Doyle cynicism to Andrew Wiebe carrying the Leagues Cup flag for 3-4 years.
Wiebe.
Yeah. Wiebe in a marching band. Yeah. Like on that scale, Wiebe in a marching
band. It's going to be wild next year when like Austin signs Pele. Recreates him and signs him to start.
They
Leagues
already have Rigoni. Why would they need that?
Oh, boy. He scored last night. Put some respect.
In a 6-3 loss. Let's
goal's a goal, mate.
Let's dig into last night. We had the two LA teams, both their games were canceled because of Hurricane Maria. Hurricane Hillary. Sorry, Hurricane. It's in my ear. Hurricane Hillary. I was singing the Maria song before we started the show.
Hurricane Maria. Let's go.
Hurricane Hillary. So
Hurricane Pumas.
We hope for the best. Yeah, we hope for the best for everyone out in the LA, California area and hope they're all safe. And then, of course, the Leagues Cup teams, they did not have their games. Let's start with the best thing we saw on match day 27. Tom, we start with you.
So I'm going to go twofold from the Columbus Crew Cincy game. It's the Aiden Morris goal. It's beautiful. Lovely goal to open it up. But before that, suspended head coach Wilfred Nantse running through a brick wall was delightful. It made me so happy.
Well, awesome. That they do that out of every entrance.
I thought this was a jackhammer thing.
Yeah. Columbus has a lot of stuff. Yeah. I'm actually a little annoyed. Shout out, Crew. I'm a little annoyed about the stuff. Because like Atlanta has a lot of stuff and they were like, we're just going to make up a million things out
sticks.
The gate and see what sticks. Columbus has all this history. They have too much stuff sometimes. But it was cool to see Nantse do that. Continue.
Do you think it was his idea or the opposite? Because I feel like Nantse was probably like, dude, I'll do this. Like, let me run. Can somebody make a brick wall for me, please, that I can run through?
Just to prove that the strength of mine is stronger than the will of a brick wall.
I love Wilfred Nantse.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, but on the field, it was that Aiden Morris goal. It was awesome.
And I think in your life, you get, unless you're Lionel Messi, you get to hit the ball that pure like twice. And for Aiden Morris.
He did that twice in this game.
The first one was great. The first one was great, but it wasn't like the goal. Yeah. That goal, like, it reminded me, like, the last time I saw a ball struck that pure in MLS might have been Jimmy Traore 10 years ago in
against Tigres
in CCL. And that was like, it was Jimmy Traore. He'd scored like one goal in 500 games.
He tried that shot every year just in case. You never know.
But that one, like, the ball did not rotate. And that was like the Aiden Morris. It was like, Like we were watching that with like Whoa. Diego Valeri and like some guys who could strike us. Like, the room exploded. Like it was incredible.
Was this before or after Weeby exploded his soda on a
this
Diego
was before
Valeri
Weeby exploded his soda on a
Weeby's out so. Today out of shame.
Oh yeah. My God.
Diego Valeri
so
2-footed.
You gotta understand. So
also, Weeby, bro, stop drinking sodas.
Weeby he grabs a soda from the fridge and he's sitting behind me, right? So it like I hear it open and fizz and like Tony Churchy and Anders are sitting next to him and it's like fizzing just a little bit and they're like, oh, watch your computer. And so Weeby's holding the fizzing soda and Anders is already like toweling off Andrew's computer. And what does Andrew do? He opens the soda more and it explodes and goes everywhere. So now you have the entire room cleaning up Andrew's mess. He's got on his $3,000 suit with his pocket square. He's just standing there holding his Dr. Pepper. Tony, like MVP Diego Valeri is over here with a handful of paper towels cleaning up Andrew Weeby's computer.
There's so much shame on so many different levels for Andrew in that. The main one being how committed he was to the soda.
He really was.
Because he was committed to the soda. And
I didn't
like,
know this wrinkle of the story that there was a warning.
Yeah.
There was a warning. Like that was the shocking part of it. He opened it a little bit and the soda went, you know, like it spurted a little bit. It's like, okay, put that down. And it's fizzing. Like, let's not.
If you're going to open it, go walk away.
Yeah,
no,
go to
because, like, around everybody's electronics and you're just like, this is what we do in Wichita.
Nice.
Zero IQ play.
Tony anyway. Churchy put it on his Twitter feed if you want to watch the aftermath.
So
the hell's real.
Aiden Morris scores and Columbus works Cincinnati
dominant.
Off the field in Hell is Real. Columbus bouncing back from Leagues Cup, where I think many people had them as favorites coming out of the group stage and then maybe not finishing off the way they wanted to. Diego Rossi comes off the bench mm-hmm. in this one. That's his debut,
yep.
I believe.
Yep.
And he plays with Cucho and Christian Ramirez for a little before Jason Russell Rowe, who's going to steal all their spots, comes off the bench and scores. But this, as I said, I think this was a proving point for Columbus of like high pressure. They played Nonce's game.
Yep. Yep. And again, with Nonce not on the bench, like he spoke about it to the broadcasters about like, yeah, like there's continuity. Like my staff has been with me this whole time. He's like, he's not worried. And like, that's where all the confidence and everything that he's been building in this group. For me, this was a big statement for Columbus. Again, like we were talking about, this was a big game. They remind me a whole lot of where Cincinnati were this time last year. Beginning of the season, Columbus, fun as hell. Cincy, right. Same thing early in the year. But they had fatal
not realistic.
Fatal defensive yeah. flaws. Like it was, you know, the 4-3 game. That's why they're number one on my watchability rankings earlier, because they were always going to attack both for the good and the bad. There was no pragmatism and there was no defensive like stoppers. A lot of it, there was a lot of individual mistakes. It was so much fun, but they weren't a real contender. Like, there's too many flaws. That's what Cincy were like. Then they got more starts from Obin and Woboto, who came in at the end of the primary window, so he was just getting up to speed. And then they signed Matt Miazga. And while it took us too long to figure out, oh, this is a legitimate contender now. They're not who they were on opening day. And Pat Noonan, with everything that he built in that team and changed the tactics and got better performances from players there and a couple really good signings, again, Matt Miazga in the summer, and Junior Moreno, but I know that was earlier as well, but they went from, oh, this is a fun team, to, oh, no, this is a legitimate contender. And they really pushed Philly in the playoffs. That's where Columbus are to me right now. I think that this is a different team than even a month ago, because they brought in Rudy Camacho, who didn't start. They brought in another center back who didn't start. Julian Gressel started. Like, this is a legitimate contending team, and I think that's what they showed last night.
So I think that's a great comp. It's interesting. The only one difference is the Zellerion thing.
Yeah, like, but Rossi came. So like that's...
And Cucho, the thing, the buried lead here...
Well, we're the ones setting the... Burying it, so we're yeah. the ones who buried it.
Going yeah. back to Weeby's... A lot of Weeby references and not a lot of Hell is Real references here.
Nice.
No, the buried lead is that Cucho is a number 10.
He looks awesome. Dude. He's awesome.
So just tactically, bear with me. I'm going to dive into it just a little bit. The three center backs. I
didn't see this coming.
Yeah, right. The three center backs that Nanse put out there are all either converted fullbacks or converted midfielders. And so they're
Zawadzki
all
is so short at times when he stands next to like a Brandon.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, okay,
short king but season, all, baby. Let's go.
They're all super comfortable on the ball. And that'll still be the case when Rudy Camacho's out there. He's one of the best dribblers off the back line and passers off the back line in the league. So they're unpressable. And what happened early in this game is that since he pressed with a two, sometimes they bring Lucho up as the third member to press. But because Columbus are the way they are, they were able to just bypass that line of pressure from Cincinnati and play directly line-breaking passes into Cucho, who was dropping deep into central midfield, except he wasn't being bracketed by the Cincy central midfielders because as soon as the first line of pressure gets broken, Nwodo and Moreno have to step up further. And now Cincy's strung out. And Cucho repeatedly got the ball on his foot in central midfield with two runners ahead of him, right? So nobody's ever, it was never Christian Ramirez by himself. He always had a partner.
It was Gressel half the time.
His Gressel half the time, or it was Matan dropping, and when it was Matan dropping in, then Cucho would push up as a second forward. Sometimes it was Yayaboa at the left wing. So suddenly Cucho's getting the ball on his foot with the ability to either just isolate against a defender or power at speed with, you know, on the run, carrying the ball forward and like making everything collapse around him. And he repeatedly made the right decision in those moments. He was phenomenal. Like, there's a reason this guy has tended. Like, he came in last year and we all thought he was Joseph.
Yeah.
And he's still wearing the number 9. Diego Rossi's the number 10. Yeah.
I came on this show day one and said it was a bad comp.
So what is the comp then? Because he still has that box predator.
Yeah. No, I got to think now. No, you're right. Yeah.
But he was playing the number 10 the way I think we saw the MVP season Diego Valeri play it, where it was more. Yeah, it was like
a transitional
half a 10, player. Half a like a Trey Curtista, Italian type of thing where he's not running the show, but he's making all the hell. He played it like Hani Mukhtar plays it.
That's where I was going to go.
I was also like going to say Swiderski last year as well, but he's a better player than Swiderski.
Yeah. And another tactical wrinkle that they did, like Cincinnati love to get forward through Alvaro Barrio up the left. And like that's where they've been killing teams this year. Columbus tried to take advantage of that and go to up the right through Gressel in the space that Barrio was vacating. 42% of their attacking third touches went down the right flank. So they were playing through Gressel, which is one hell of a player to play through. That's a smart tactical play. So I think that they have different ways now to beat you as well, because there's that. They're going to build through possession. But as you're saying, Jordan, even if it's like possession but building from the back, there were transition moments as well, or like half a transition, half like a break, where playing through Cucho and he's not losing the ball. And like that was the one knock on Zelarayán, bad turnovers. Phenomenal player, took a lot of chances as he should have, and he scored a lot of goals. A few too many bad turnovers. Like, so this team might have another level to get to. And with this 3-4-2-1, they have, so Christian Ramirez up top as kind of a traditional number 9. Then they have 2 9.5s in Rossi and Cucho, who can also do a whole lot more of worrying about scoring as well because of how good Cucho has been. And because now they have their 10 as Gressel on the right. He's going to create so many chances for them. So there's just so many different ways that this team can beat you. And then look, if Aiden Morris is stepping up from 25 yards to score, like how do you defend this team?
So the one little bit of pushback I'll give here is that if this team is a contender, I don't think they have any replacements for Morris and Nag in central midfield. And that's one. And two is like, Aiden Morris has played that well exactly one game in his life, and we just saw it, right? Like he's
and MLS really, Cup.
Yeah, MLS Cup.
Well, that's fair. All right. So twice in his life.
He's a big game player.
I need to see that consistently from Aiden Morris before I believe that the crew are going to be able to go through that Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it's going
to
be. Oh my God, it's going to be
murder.
But the top team, Cincy, and they just beat them 3-0.
Yeah, for sure.
So in terms of the confidence there, I want to add one more thing of the Zelarayán to Rossi switch, which is Rossi is a high-level pressing player.
Yes.
Zelarayán's not really in that conversation. And what I felt like I saw was Rossi will actually slide out left and they'll press with a front three. Mm-hmm. And Cucho works hard. Rossi, there was times he came back to top of his 18 to win the ball back. Like yep. you have, it's a different style. Zellerán can create something out of nothing. Rossi doesn't really do that. So in big games, big moments, you might need magic. And maybe that's also a part that's not on the field. But in terms of cohesive unit and like knowing where guys are going to be and being able to build your press to say, yeah, everyone's going to come. When Christian closes, the whole team, all 11 are coming in the same direction. Diego Rossi is going to be an add on that. And it's going to be fun to watch. He knows the league. He's been in big moments in the league. Like, it feels like as safe a signing as you could have made to replace Zellerán. And now that you've seen Cucho, I think already for a little bit play well in that replacement, it's going to be big. Let's move to Doyle's best thing. And you want to talk about Houston. One of our Open Cup teams.
Yeah. The Houston Dynamo, 5-0. We've banged on them all year for getting to the final third and then not doing much with it. No complaints about their performance last night against a Portland team that I will say, honestly, they look a little bit like they might be quitting on Gio Savarese. Like they did not look engaged in that game.
Diego Chara and the new center back got smoked.
Yeah.
Which is not a great way to start.
But like you should be able to
not lose 5-0.
Yeah. Against a team that had scored 26 goals in 24 games before that, or 23 games before that one. Like the Dynamo are not a juggernaut. They looked like a juggernaut last night. Corey Barrett had another good game. He's got, I think, 10 goals and 5 assists across all competitions this year.
Man, I should have picked him instead of Jordan Morris.
Right? Well, he's only... No, I mean, Jordan Morris still has like twice as many league goals, but Corey Barrett was really good. Bossy... was very good.
And missed the sitter.
Right.
And still scored.
But it's Coco Carrasquilla. Coco Carrasquilla was phenomenal. On the Baird goal.
The back heel?
The back heel through ball.
It's like a 30-yard back heel at pace.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And it was, and it's not just the final ball, which he has improved now. He still runs the game. Like, he might be the best number 8 in all of MLS.
Maybe for another 9 days.
Yeah, fair. Spain. So go ahead. What do we have to?
No, the reason why they signed the Polish midfielder when they did, like they're bracing for bids to come where they're gonna like
they don't know, we don't know where.
So the last I talked to people about it, which was probably a week ago, was that there was still like there was a ton of interest, but nothing that they had to like consider yet. But the expectation is that they're like probably gonna get an offer that it's like, all right, like, let's go.
We have to do it. And it's a shame because I don't think that people outside of Houston and outside of Gold Cup sickos understand how good
awesome
Coco Carrasquilla. I mean, he was player of the tournament in the Gold Cup. I thought he, you know, the best player on the field in every game that Panama played.
Yeah, he's a ball magnet.
He's incredible.
Yeah. Like, it's not final third stuff a lot of times, which I think is why a lot of people don't see it. Also, for Houston, I think he covers a lot of what Ace Ace leaves on the table.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing the best of Ace Ace when he's out there of like, the late run for the header down for the goal. It's like, yeah, because Coco's going to cover centrally
right when
Ace's out of position.
And still have the ability to do stuff like hit 30-yard back heel through balls, primary assists.
Unbelievable. So Houston's got Open Cup semifinal coming up this week. We'll get to that in a second. Best thing I saw, obviously, MLS All-Star Mathieu Chouinard. Goal against TFC in a 3-2 win.
Mano with Bernardeschi, man.
He's
Bologna elite. should be trying to sign him. Do you have same ownership as Montreal?
They can't afford it. that's rich guy stuff. You can't get into the field at that. But in perfect David Goss fashion, I also have to bring up Jules Anthony Vilsaint, who was awesome in this game.
Yeah, he was the Quebecer Tom Barlow, man.
Don't disrespect. Come on, dude. Chill.
No, his feet
looked good.
Yeah, he's Tom Barlow's feet look good. He was.
Don't make me pick between my two children on this.
Gifted forward who gets into the right spots, does a lot of things that help his team.
He created the chances in this himself.
Like Tom Barlow.
No, it's so much more. He comes inside, I think it's the second goal. He curls it past the keeper off the post and then back off the keeper for the rebound.
Did
and
he
then
score the goal?
No, because it ended up being an own goal. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. But he did more to help the goal than Tom Barlow would. So shout out to
unnecessary. My, so unnecessary.
Yeah, Tom I don't Barlow know why right you gotta
now.
Hate.
Shout I'm out. Not hating. I'm giving them both a compliment. I just said they both do things that help their team.
Shout out to Montreal for getting the next young player through. And obviously Chouinard keeping it all together, which takes us to
I just want to say, I thought Saliba was very good in central midfield as well. And I know they're very high on him long term. He hasn't developed as rapidly this year.
Because they played him as a 10 for like five games and it sucked.
Yeah. But he looked good. In the caveat, just as there's a caveat for Houston, this came against Toronto.
So
they scored their first goal of the Terry Dunfield era. Oh, yeah. They had not scored since they fired Bobby.
And it was a Bernadeschi, no opportunity, low XG rocket.
Yeah.
His first goal since April 2nd, which again, coincidentally, was like, I'm sorry, he didn't run
Golden
to the camera.
Golden Boot team is printing money on that one.
Holding, running to the camera of like, the transfer window is still open.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about all this in a context of the playoff race, because we're back into the MLS regular season after a month off because of League's Cup. So we wanted to give everyone a primer. We've talked, I think, a lot about the tops of the two conference. St. Louis comes back out. They look themselves are better. Dominate Austin this weekend. Cincinnati obviously has Open Cup coming up. We know Philly was in League's Cup as well. We've talked to RSL, I think, a lot over the last few weeks, and we're going to talk about them in Open Cup. So we're only going to talk about the playoff race and really the race for the final two spots in the postseason. You're each going to choose one conference. You're each going to choose who you think gets in, your reasoning, and then we'll go from there. So I'll set the stage. For starters, to remind everyone, there are 9 playoff teams in each conference this year. Mm-hmm. That is a change. Mm-hmm.
There are 7 playoff teams. There are 2 play-in teams.
The 8th and 9th seed.
There are 9 postseason teams.
The 8th and 9th seeds will face off in a play-in game, a 1-game play-in game, obviously, at the higher seed to move into the top 8, where we'll start the first round, which is the best of 3 series. Obviously, as you'd expect, home and away based off the higher seed. So in the East, we're going to start the conversation with Atlanta in 7th place on 38 points. Then behind them, you have Montreal and Chicago tied on 32 points. They are tied in 8th and 9th. They are the playoff line. Under the line, you've got DC United 2 points behind them, Red Bulls 3 points behind them, and then Charlotte and NYCFC are tied 6 points behind the playoff spot. There's a lot of games in hand stuff going on in there because of Leagues Cup and the weather and all of that. We'll talk about that as we go along. Tom, you are the most East Coast person I know. So you have been anointed East Coast. We are going to be we're talking New Jersey Division III soccer right now. Stockton College.
Kane University, get out of here with Stockton. Give me a break.
Tom, set the stage for us. Who are the teams you're picking and why?
After that. One team you didn't mention, Inter Miami. I think they're making the playoffs.
Oh, interesting. You went all the way down to the bottom.
I did go all the way down to the bottom. With all due respect to my man, Sasha Kleshin,
Seton Hall University.
the honorary
teach,
New Jersey.
They don't teach math there.
the logic was sound, and I understood all of the points, but then you watch this team for the League's Cup, and like, do you think that the Chicago Fire are going to run away from them on the playoff line? They're 14 points below the playoff line, but they have at least 2 games in hand over everybody ahead of them, if not 3 games in hand on a couple of the teams. If they win 9 games, right? Like, is that 27? Yeah, easily. That would do it. Like, 8 games might do it as well out of their last 12. Like, you watch this team for the last month, and they can't win 8 of their last 12. I know that there's going to be fixture congestion with the Open Cup semis and potentially finals, depending on what happens on Wednesday against Cincinnati. But, like, they're just too good. And like I was saying before, they're integrating $15 million worth of South American youth internationals. Gregory's coming back. John Mota's coming back. So even with this congestion, they're going to have plenty of options and plenty of legs and plenty of runners, like particularly with the younger guys. This team is too good to miss the playoffs. And like that's what it comes down to. Again, the argument against it is very sound logically and mathematically. But I'm just going with five here.
They don't teach either of those at Keen University.
No
logic, no math.
Just vibes. Just vibes, just baby. That's
vibes,
why we're here.
Baby.
Just vibes. So Miami.
He's got a BV, a bachelor in vibes. I will throw this out there for Miami. They have an interesting schedule in which they don't really play the teams in front of them that much. They play Charlotte twice and Red Bulls, which often you'd say, oh, those are 6-pointers. That's actually probably a good thing because all the teams play each other. Yeah. So if you want to catch a lot of teams, you actually want everyone to inconsistently take points off each other and let you jump over them. It is set up that way for Miami if they're able to be competitive game in and game out with the potential Open Cup final in there and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, so, but I'm still with Miami. And
so
like,
you think they sneak in at 9?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it depends on where it's shaped, but 8 or 9 I don't think makes much of a difference. But again, a one-game stand, but you'd rather play at home. But like, look, it's messy and just get in. It is kind of the vibe. So yeah, and I think that's my number one storyline I'm watching down the stretch run. It's going to be so much fun watching them chase the playoff line. And I hope that they stay in long enough that it's like unlike Toronto last year, I thought that's what's going to happen. And then their last few games were meaningless because they didn't. So yeah, that's one team. The other team I'm going to go with after that Montreal talk, I've been swung. I was going back and forth between Montreal and DC.
Got you on board.
I'm swinging a Montreal. They're like,
bonjour.
Like, and again, I've been on DC most of the year, but like, I think that at this point, Montreal have more quality and they have more, like, I didn't know how the defense was going to come together. Mm-hmm. And they've shown over the last couple months that like, it's not going to be the best in the league, but it's a lot better than it was at the beginning of the season. I think the Bryce Duke and Opoku were two very, very good additions. And again, like all of my commentary on the Bryce Duke trade was set aside that I think he's a very good player and I think he's going to be very good for Montreal. It was still too steep of a price. So you can be critical of the deal without being critical of the player, if that sounds too, you know, stupid to say out loud. So I would take Montreal.
You'll say it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, most of the things I say are too stupid to say out loud. And
but
the way
you,
I deliver
you power
it,
through it.
Yeah.
BV.
They're just getting sympathy votes from people right now.
Actually,
so much
he now has a master's. Has a master's in vibes.
Can we bring math into it for Montreal?
No.
I'm going to.
I don't really want you, nerd.
Do it.
Go outside.
4 of their next 5 are at home. They're 8-3-0 at home this year.
Vibes.
They could end this discussion. Like they could end this discussion over the next few weeks. Yeah. They really could.
Yeah. And so and like that's in like their home form. Like I really like a lot of things that DC do. I think that their game model is perfect for the talent they have on the field in playing through Christian Benteke and having runners off of him. But losing, they do have a DP spot open, so if they did want to go get Jesse Lingard, that could be a very, like, I'm surprised that he hasn't been linked yet with DC United like he was last year, even though they didn't have a...
Sounds like he just got linked.
Yeah, I'm saying if his agent out there should be connecting DC United to Jesse Lingard, so... But I don't think that they have enough quality. They have a lot of combativeness, but I don't think they have enough quality at this stage. So I'm going to take Montreal over that.
Did you keep an eye on their little number 10 from Brazil that played last night? I thought he was decent.
He looked a lot like the guy he was replacing.
Yeah.
Which for them at this point of the season is as best you're going to get.
Yeah.
But you still have lost Lewis O'Brien and all that.
Yeah.
I think that's a step back.
And like, it's difficult to leave out some of the other teams. Like, this is going to be a difficult playoff race. Like, the Red Bulls haven't missed the playoffs in 14 years or whatever. NYCFC are 18 months or whatever removed from winning a MLS Cup and have a lot of time. Like, there's a lot of good teams below the playoff line they're going to miss out.
You guys, I'm a big schedule reader. Listen
riveting,
to
Red- riveting radio.
Riveting stuff. Listen to Red Bulls finish, though. They host Miami this weekend in what is going to be a zoo of a situation.
I can't wait. Best press box in the league because you're right behind the bench. Sure. Like, I cannot wait to be there.
Then you have at New England, at Philly, at NYCFC. You host Austin. You go to DC. You host Chicago. Then you go at Cincinnati. You host Toronto. And you finish at Nashville. Those are the 4 best teams in the East all on the road.
Yeah. Like, but Red Bull being Red Bull, like, this is when they get hot.
And also, those are, like, ideal matchups where they're like, oh, we don't have to have the ball. I think the combined XG on the DC game was 0.09 between the two teams.
Are you kidding me?
And John Tolkien scored off a free kick that...
It was a banger.
Yeah. Went around the wall on that near post. I couldn't tell if it went through or around.
I wouldn't call it a banger.
I thought it was a well-struck free kick.
Yeah,
I mean, it was not a perfect wall. I think it went around.
Yeah. So let me throw in my... So you have Montreal... You landed on Montreal in 8th, Miami in 9th.
Yeah.
So the big thing that stands out to me is NYCFC have 5 home games left. And then they finish Yeah, nice. Thank you. NYCFC has 5 tri-state area-based games remaining. They'll play Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena, and that's actually potentially not true, so please don't look for tickets or base your schedule off that. They finish at Miami, at DC, and home to Chicago, which is a lot of 6-point stuff where you could potentially control your own destiny.
And they looked good last night.
Maxi Morales started. Bakrar didn't finish, but
he gets into good spots.
The movements make sense.
Yep.
They've got center back depth as well.
Yeah, Burke Rizzo is a good signing.
So to me, they are the one that I would put in there.
Yeah, I'm.
I think
so over Montreal, Miami.
I think they are the best team on paper of these of this group, not counting Miami. But like the point you made in the pre-show, Tom, is like they like. It's hard to trust them.
I'm sick of waiting for this. We've been saying this for months, and like
I've been saying it for a year.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, your point of since Tati left, like it's.
But
they don't get the benefit of the doubt. Like I don't care. Like let's see it happen. Like I believe that they're capable of it. But I've been saying this for a year that I have to see it.
I think all of that is fair, and a lot of the pieces have changed. But with Maxi there, they have never underperformed.
Yeah, that's fair too.
So now they've brought back they lost Sean John. They lost. You know, Collins. Tati, they lost a lot of that core where you're like, yeah, I do trust them because you're right. And the guys there you don't trust. But now Maxi's back.
Yeah.
And if he's Maxi.
And he was brilliant. He was really good.
So NYC over Miami or Montreal?
Miami.
Wow.
Just based off numbers.
Off math.
Yeah.
Which they do teach at, where did you go?
Northeastern University. It costs a lot more. Yeah. Good dog.
A lot more pedigree, to be fair.
It's a lot of waste a lot
Kane
more
is
money.
Very, very monetarily. It's a good financial choice.
It's like the Bryce Duke trade. It's not a bad school, but for what you're giving up, it's not worth it over the long run.
Put it on the brochure for Northeastern.
Yeah. Go dogs. Gino Auriemma. Not Gino. Jim Calhoun.
And late great Reggie Lewis.
Yeah. So. Shout out. The one thing with Miami is just. You talked about all the legs and all the players and all that, but they put a lot out there. Like this was not winning four regular season games in a row. This was high energy, a ton of travel. There's a lot going on. And it feels like if it falls, it could fall apart, not because players are bad, but because like that's how emotions work on the up and down. So that's the Eastern Conference. That's where we stand right now. Let's go to the West. So I started with Atlanta in seventh place in the Eastern Conference, and Atlanta coming into it, they are 6 points up on eighth and ninth place. They've played one more game. So if I go by that same parameters of points, I have to start with Seattle in fourth place on 36 points, but an extra game played. And then based off the same range, I have to go all the way down to 12th place with SKC on 26 points. The line right now is Minnesota and Vancouver. They are both tied in eighth and ninth on 31 points. They have two games in hand on Seattle and two games in hand, I believe, on SKC. So there's a lot of stuff going on because those LA games were canceled, as well as Leagues Cup and whatever else. But that is your range. Oh, I'm back to Doyle now. Doyle's doing the West. That's your range that I set from fourth all the way down to 12th of teams that are in this conversation.
Yeah. I can't get on the Seattle are in trouble bandwagon. They did not play well last night. I think we're going to have a bigger conversation about this either later on in this show or
probably
later
next,
on this week.
Next show.
Yeah.
That and the free agency talk. We'll get there.
We're going to get it. I didn't even paste it in.
Yeah. I think Seattle, like this group, is going to figure out a way to start grinding out results down the stretch. It's not even grinding. Like they've played some good soccer over the past couple months. They just haven't finished. I think Raul Ruiz Diaz figures it out. Jordan Morris figures it out. They get Christian Roldan back. This will not, like, we won't see this version of the Sounders next year. This will be a fond farewell, but we will see them in the playoffs. It gets iffier after that, but I tend to believe that teams that are above the line at this point in the year stay above the line. San Jose, I don't think, are going away. That was a huge win for them in Vancouver. Houston, we just saw what they did. Then it gets questionable.
So now you're in seventh with Austin on 32 points, which is one spot above the playoff line, but they've played one more game than Vancouver and Minnesota and Dallas.
Right. And that's where I think Austin is a team that I think is going to drop. What we've seen from them for most of the season, other than like a little five-game run just before a League's Cup, is that they still don't have the type of balance between not just attack and defense, but between possession and transition on both sides of the ball. And that's why they got annihilated by St. Louis. And like teams that have that obvious weakness down the stretch, once everyone gets dialed in and says, oh, we need to win this one to make the playoffs, flaws that are that big get exposed more often than they do in May, June, and July. So I think Austin are going to drop. I think that Vancouver are going to drop. The Caps have had some really good moments. They won another Canadian championship this year. They have played a really front-loaded home schedule. Their next seven games are on the road. And last night was a killer.
Yeah.
Last night was a six-pointer.
Yeah.
They dominated. They had their looks. They had to walk away from that one, not just with a point. They had to walk away from that one with 3 points. Seven straight on the road, and they're not easy games either. So I think...
And with Vancouver on the road, reminder, they always have to travel far.
Yeah.
It's like they're the corner. There's no a lot of directions.
Unless it's two... Like, I think a couple of those
are... Well, they play Portland, but they play Toronto. They play Red Bulls. They have to go to altitude twice in that run and play at RSL in Colorado. It's a tough stretch for that team as they integrate. By the way, Richie Larea started. Adekube came off the bench in that game. So you have Vancouver out and Austin out.
I have Minnesota climbing.
Okay.
Four of their next five are at home, and their one away game is to the Quakes, and it feels like they always just smash the Quakes.
They're better on the road than at home, so like they would have been better if they had a road heavy.
It's a fair point, but like I did like what I saw of them in League's Cup. I know they went out badly against Nashville, but like before that, I thought they had looked. I think Bongi having turned a corner as a goal scorer, Reynoso looks like he's back 100% fit and in form. This team is not going to miss the playoffs. And then I don't think Dallas will miss the playoffs. They have taken a step back from last year, right? They miss Matt Hedges as an organizer. The injuries they've suffered in midfield has caused them to play with their shape more. Now, that might end up being a good thing, because I think what we saw from them in League's Cup with Velasco as a number 10 instead of as a free eight or a winger, I think that I think that is going to end up being their best look.
Yeah, I do too.
Just like, can Nico Estevez, like it's not a very Spanish look, right? It's not about positional play and pitch control, and it's about like, all right, can we create enough runners off of this creative genius? And Velasco did when he played it as a 10. He looked a different level creatively than what we've seen from him in other spots. But I think they get over the line one way or another. The question I have about Dallas, I'm going to pose this to you, Tom. They opened up a DP slot back in January by buying out Frank O'Hara.
So weird.
They did not use that this summer. I thought they had used it with Ilarbende, who they signed and who will presumably start, you know, playing as a number six for them. Yep. I thought that he was going to be their third DP. So they have that slot open.
Yeah.
I did the Bill Manning thing and I looked through Transfer Market's list of available free agents. Like these are guys who had to have been out of contract before August 2nd, which was a close of the MLS transfer window. The three most interesting...
Neymar.
Yeah, not Neymar. The three most interesting ones are Eden Hazard, which we can all agree is... There's no chance. Alexis Sanchez, and we all kind of scoffed, and he's 34, so he's older. He scored 18 goals for Marseille last year, including 14 in Ligue 1.
I don't think Dallas would pay him enough. I don't think that they would get close on wages. So.
Okay. And then the other one is Luis Chavez. Like, he's a full Mexican international, ball-winning midfielder, you know, can go box to box, can play as a six, 27 years old. We saw he was excellent for Pachuca last year. He was out of contract. Is there any chance that Dallas make... And remember, Jesus Ferreira is a young DP.
Yep.
So they have, no matter what they do, they could go spend $150 million on whoever they want here. No matter what they do, they have access to all three U22 slots.
Let me throw out Chavez, 27 in his prime. I think what happened, I couldn't figure it out before. They sold him to Dynamo Moscow, and because of the Russia-Ukraine war, I do not know that the purchase was able to go through properly.
Okay.
And therefore, he is a free agent because he is not registered to a team. And like you said, he fits literally every box you'd talk about for an MLS DP of like, hits the market, young, like everything you want.
In the prime yeah. And like has won. Yeah. Like he played for a Pachuca team that was like, they had a bye into the League's Cup round of 32 because they were so damn good mm-hmm. over the past couple of tournaments.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if that was not just Chavez, if they bring in anybody, because like even again, like we just named a couple of potential interesting options and it was pretty quick to be like Eden Hazard, no, Alexis Sanchez, no, and then Chavez, maybe not, I don't know. So you kind of go down the list and how many viable options are there really, and like I'm not sure
they should be viable though.
I'm not sure how like motivated Dallas are to do it, like,
but
like,
we're talking about Dallas, right? I'm talking about one of the five biggest markets in this,
yeah, I mean
in this league.
I'm not saying that I agree with this, I'm just saying what's realistic versus what we want.
Like they bought out Frank O'Hara. They spent money to do this.
That was mutual contract termination.
Okay.
And he went, so his contract was expiring in the middle, at the end of June.
Yeah.
And it was very clear he wasn't coming back. And so they got out of his contract so he could go sign back in Argentina. But regardless, like I'm surprised that they didn't either in the spring or in the summer. Paul Areola has their final DP spot and he's like at the very upper echelon of Max Tam, I'm pretty sure. It's like, so they would have to, I'm sure that they have the allocation money, but they would have to move around allocation money to buy him down to then bring in another DP. So like, I think that they're just like where they are. Like they don't, one thing with Andre Zanota at this club, they don't rush into things. They don't try to do stop gaps. They try to always have the midterm like vision in mind. And like if they were to bring in somebody like, again, I think Alexis Sanchez would be a good signing for an MLS club. Like I'm not exactly if he's perfect for Dow, but regardless, like that seems like a, oh crap, like we need to get better right now. Like what do we need to do? It's like Dallas don't make those kind of moves.
So one name you didn't put in there, which is transfer market has that higher value than Alexis Sanchez, is Reggie Cannon.
Yeah.
Former FC Dallas player.
Yeah.
I'm not saying long term, but if you're talking about short term, I think he knows how to get to Dallas.
Yeah, I don't,
he's been
I
to
don't,
Fifth Street Patio Cafe.
I don't.
He knows the vibes.
I don't think Reggie's gonna.
Don't see this one happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have Dallas in eighth.
I do. I think Dallas are in eighth. I already dropped Vancouver out, even though in my notes before the show
just
I said
like
they
me
just
with DC. Look at barely work on the fly.
Barely hang
ready
out
to have our minds.
No,
changed.
We're just workshopping together. This show is an experience.
Keeping an open. We're free thinkers.
Yeah, we're. Listen, doctor and vibes right here. Dr. V.
Before
whoa.
Before I give my answer, I want our
I said it over. Maybe it'll sneak by. It's not a big deal. Tom couldn't. No chance. Continue.
Oh, God. I want Tom to give the pitch on why the Galaxy get the ninth.
He doesn't want it because he's afraid to get
no
made up.
I'm not I do not believe the Galaxy can do this.
I wasn't giving a pitch, and by the way you're skirting on giving your own answers just because he wants to make fun of me. This is what he does.
It's okay. Maria's like, well, hurry up soon, and yeah, Doyle's right now repitching the show
been,
back
I haven't
to
been
time
hearing Maria.
No, I know.
Okay,
I'm in the eye of the hurricane right now.
Look, I'm not saying that I'm going outright saying that I think that they're not dead and buried. I really like what they did at the end of the transfer window.
Oh, like the Maya Yoshida free agent signing.
I do. Michael and Diego Barrios. They're undeniably.
It's like Messi and Busquets.
They're undeniably better than they were 4 weeks ago. The Gaston Brugman injury would have sunk their season. Any whatever chances that I know that you guys don't think they have a chance. Whatever chances I thought that they would have had, Gaston Brugman out, sunk the season. But they were able to get Edwin Cerillo because Dallas signed Alarmendi. And like that was part of it. That's why they had to wait for a lot of these things, because with their transfer ban, they were reliant on, okay, we'll agree this deal for Cerillo if we get this signing over the line. So that's why. And then Cerillo was on the bench on the night of the transfer window, and they had a deal in place, and they didn't finalize a deal yet. They didn't send the paperwork. So Cerillo was named to the bench, and the details of the trade got changed a little bit to where it was like, I think, $100,000 up front, like whatever it is. $300,000 of the add-ons hits when Cerillo makes his debut for the Galaxy, because they were like, whoa. You put him on the bench? Like, what if he gets hurt? Like, yeah. We're changing the add-ons. It's like, all right, fine. He plays one game and you get the money. So anyway, I really like what they did. Yoshida, I think, fits because they're a possession-based system. Cerillo played a possession-based system in Dallas. Fagundes played a similar system in Austin. All these players shouldn't take any time to integrate into the team. I really do think that they have a chance. Again, Ricky Pooch is one of the best players in the league. Like, I'm not going to count this team out. And again, like we just ran through all of the options around them. Vancouver have all the away games. Like, Austin haven't been very good. Like, Houston, 3 days ago, we might not have had Houston in this position.
Fair.
Portland have all their problems. Kansas City have all their problems and have played more games.
3 days ago, we probably would have had Portland in this conversation more than we did just now.
There's like every other year at the bottom of the playoff race, like you can talk yourself into a lot of teams, but then you can very easily talk yourself out of a lot. Like I just don't think that they're dead and gone yet.
I think the Galaxy are 1 week from being gone out of this discussion.
They've played the least games because
they have two games in hand.
Because the El Tráfico that got rescheduled, I believe, and that. So they have two games in hand. They are 9 points behind. They have one game in hand on the playoff line.
That's true.
And they're 9 points behind it.
It's too much.
Yeah.
I don't think they have even the defense to make it stand up.
Even with the moves you talked about, let's go all the way back to the Bryce Stew thing. I think they did well with the moves.
Mm-hmm.
Take away Brueggemann, though, and now you're talking about a team that was already in 13th. Yeah. I don't think they got better.
Yeah.
I think they maybe, I think they'll be better long term having Diego Fagundes and maybe Cerrillo. But I don't think they're that much better than they maybe even were because no Casares as well, right?
Yeah.
They've lost all these pieces that they filled back in for the 13th place team in the league.
I think Yoshida is better than Casares, but again, that's, again, immaterial as well. It's not like a significant difference, right? So, like, I understand the points, but I don't know. I just don't think that enough teams have like separated themselves.
So it's the two teams we haven't talked about yet are Kansas City and Portland. And Sporting KC have been better since Alan Pulido has come back. But they're still picking up just 1.5 points per game with him in the lineup. They have a difficult schedule remaining. And Portland have a game in hand on them. Portland's remaining schedule, and I know they were terrible in Houston. But they're always bad in Texas, for one. And for two, they were...
Yeah, don't they have that historically? Yeah. They won like one game, and because they got crushed by... I think they were the first team Austin ever beat. Yeah, wow. I forgot about Portland and Texas.
Yeah. Okay. Now, they do have a game in Texas left. They have to go to Austin, I think, a month from now.
Nice.
But three of their next four are at home. They have Diego Chara back next week. He missed this game last night with a red card. I think Portland find a way to get over the playoff line and into ninth place. And as their reward, they then have to go to Texas
and play at Dallas.
And play at Dallas in the play-in game. Yeah. So I think Portland get there. And I know it's ridiculous to say it after they were so bad in that 5-0, but like this team historically under Gio Savarese, and there are questions of whether or not he still has the locker room. We've seen players come out publicly this year and ask for trades and be pretty open about not wanting to be there anymore. And Vander hadn't fit in really seamlessly, and Ivasic isn't the player. But speaking of guys who spoke publicly about not loving Gio Savarese, they find a way almost every year to get it done. I think they find a way this year as well. They sneak in at the end, but they won't be sticking around for long in the postseason.
So Dallas and Vancouver, Montreal.
Dallas and Miami. Portland.
Sorry, Dallas. I forgot all of them already. Dallas and Portland, Montreal and Miami.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any strong West name that you want to put down there? LA Galaxy. So you're saying
you're
Dallas.
Trying to talk you to this.
You're saying Dallas Galaxy?
No. No.
Weeby is texting. Weeby says Galaxy.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Galaxy and KC.
I bet he does. Let's move to the U.S. Open Cup semifinals because while all these teams are fighting to get into the playoffs, we've got four teams with an opportunity to win a trophy. FC Cincinnati hosting Inter Miami at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and then the Houston Dynamo hosting RSL at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. Let's start Cincinnati-Miami. We did a long thing about Miami. But we questioned them going into the Philly game, and we questioned them going into the Nashville game of, can a team that is hyper-efficient and direct take advantage of the deficiencies that exist in Miami? It has not happened. Cincinnati is, in theory, the best team in Major League Soccer. Is this the one?
I think Cincy have to play a lot better than they have been really for the past couple of months. And honestly, it feels like they're still in third gear all season long. They were able to just squeeze out a bunch of 1-0s early in the season, which is speaks well of them defensively. They will have Matt Miazga back for this game. I don't know about Mascara, if he'll play. Go ahead, Tom.
I just got so happy about thinking of Matt Miazga doing the too short thing to Lionel Messi like he did to Diego Lainez.
Yeah, Miazga's
and then Messi does the Jerome Boateng thing to Miazga.
Messi's been talking a bunch in games. He's gotten in a
He's never met Clifton,
game.
New Jersey.
So,
he's never met Clifton, New Jersey.
So Miami, I like, in theory, you should be able to press them, and I think you can press them. You can get behind Busquets and make him uncomfortable, make drag Busquets around, make him follow Lucho. But also, Kamal Miller and Christoph both, but especially Kamal Miller, so good at evading that first line of pressure. Mm. And if Miami do that against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati gets strung out against Miami the way they got strung out against Columbus, well, they're going to have a really bad time. I still think Cincinnati are favorites here. And also, there's an argument that maybe you rest Messi in this game.
I was about to ask.
Go ahead.
But Tata's comment so far says Messi likes to play. He's going to play. I think it's also past Messi of like you are coming off 4 days rest, right? Mm-hmm. So like not just Messi. How many is Joseph start? Right. Does Busquets start? Right. Does Jordi Alba start?
But you have other guys you could plug in those spots.
Yes.
Yeah, but does that risk a little bit of the momentum in full? So,
I understand that. I think you rotate around this play and probably around Busquets as well. I know that he looked a little bit more kind of tired towards the end of that national game, but like Messi is an alien, man. Like he doesn't ever want to be subbed out. He always wants to play and he doesn't run a lot. Like Pablo Mara did Pep Guardiola always talked about this. Pablo Mara did a really good article. Me and him both covered Philly Miami in Philly, and what he did was I'm just focusing my camera on Messi the entire time. And then wrote a story kind of about that experience. And he's like, I know that he walks a lot. But he's like, if you're just focusing on him, he walks a lot. And it's like, he's so special, man. I don't think you rest him. And it's not like he's pressing like Diego Rossi or Cucho Hernandez. Like, I don't see a scenario in which you sit him for this. I just don't.
I think even if you're like, he's going to play 45, you start him.
Yeah, so I would go the other way. I'm the opposite. Yeah. I'm like, do you just try to make the first half
outside
ugly
of the Nashville
hell?
Game, they scored in the first 15 minutes of every game that Messi started.
It's fair.
Don't you want to play from a lead?
I'd rather have Messi. Like,
for extra time and penalty.
If you know that he's only getting... Time?
Do we know
That's a good question.
I think it is.
For sure. Yeah.
But if you like, I wouldn't take him out if it's nil-nil. If you're planning on, I'm only going to play him 45 minutes. If it's nil-nil at halftime, he's not coming out. Like,
maybe, but if he's going to play 45 and you bring him in the second half and now you go to extra, like, I'd roll you the bring him in the 60th, then he's going to play all the way through extra time.
I would just plan on bringing in Busquets and Messi at halftime.
Yeah. I would settle with that. But again, like, if Messi says, screw you, I want to start, it's a cup semifinal. I don't care.
Right. Then you start him.
Yeah, and I think that's what he's going to do because everybody who like talks about him and has followed his career, that's what he always does.
Yeah.
And like
he's won every competition he's ever played in except one. The only thing he hasn't won
Open
is
Cup?
Coupe France.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated to see Barrial and whoever it is, which is the spaces behind those.
You don't rotate if you're Yedlin.
No, but I'm saying the space is behind Yedlin and Alba, or it's against them 1v1. Like those two players are out there to attack from the fullback position. They have not really played teams that I thought Kai Wagner did well of like, he hit that a few early balls where Yedlin hadn't stepped out to him and the positioning wasn't perfect. Yedlin overlaps Kramaski a ton.
Yeah.
And then he fills in that space.
And Arroyo drops deep.
Yeah.
Arroyo's rotations has been spectacular.
Yeah. But like, if that's Barrial against one of those two guys, I'll take that if I'm Cincinnati, right? That's an all-star. That's a former DP. Like, he's been the best.
A player who Ajax wants to sign.
Right. He's the best left wing back in the league. So I think Cincinnati fits well of like the things they do well are what I think the deficiencies are in Miami. We have not yet seen a team take advantage of the deficiencies. Dallas a little bit.
Just to be clear, if you're Cincinnati, you don't rotate.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, you rotate from what you put out there.
Well, I mean,
this is
Miazga
must win.
Back. In. Yes. Yeah, you play your strongest.
I might drop Bupenza for Sergio Santos because body language doctor was not a big fan. It was raising a lot of flags.
The lack
of chemistry between Bupenza, Lucho, and Vasquez is getting a little worrying at this point.
And there was a lot, again, like, these are adult, grown men who make their living. This is different than everybody's playing for fun, but like, there was a lot that I didn't like of Bupenza's body language, off the ball stuff. It seemed like he demanded the ball at all times, whether he was open or not, and upset if he didn't get. Like Brandon Vasquez, or I forget if it was Vasquez or Barrial. I think they were 14 yards out and had a clear shot at goal and took a shot. Bupenza was covered at the back post, and he stopped when the ball was shot, put his hands up, and screamed, "Why didn't you pass me the ball?" And like, these are little stupid things that over the course of time don't matter if he scores 15 goals. But at this stage, I don't like it. I don't love it. And I'd probably go with Santos for this game.
Shout out to Bobby Warshaw for next to me on this one.
Need elbow patches.
Yeah. And Amazing. Then in honor of Andrew Wiebe, I'm going to bring a segment in that he is going to adore. And I think maybe came up with, not sure, that we'll do for the future, which is who's going to trade jerseys with Messi in this matchup.
I think Lucho Acosta would assault somebody if they tried to take my Messi. This is his birthright. Oh, he was at the final in Qatar.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
American hero, soon to be American hero, Lucho Acosta.
Ray Gattis has been in this league for a while. He has built the West Virginian soccer program up. He has reset FC Cincinnati's culture. I think you got to respect Ray Gattis on this too. I'm putting my bid in for you, Ray. I've already made my argument. You should play this for Lucho or Brandon or whoever else thinks they're going to get it.
Depends.
But I'm pretty sure it's going to be Lucho Acosta, the Argentine 10, who is the MVP candidate on the team. Second game, Houston RSL. Houston obviously coming off the massive win. They're home. I think, like we sort of talked about in the standings thing, 3 days ago we would have said RSL were heavy favorites, especially pre-League's Cup.
Yeah, pre-injury to Pablo Ruiz.
Okay. True.
You know, and that's he scored. Didn't he score the 50-yarder or the 70-yarder in Houston? Yeah.
Was that Houston? I thought it was against Tyler Miller.
No, I don't think his was against Tyler Miller. No, it was just on the same.
Well, you look that up and say, and I'll talk about RSL. They were so good, you know, through most of the season, and a lot of it is because they make the field big. They and Ruiz is their key to doing that because his left foot is so good. He hits the best, among the best diagonals in the league. They get both fullbacks up. They overlap. They create numbers one side and then hit crosses to the back post.
Tom was right.
They're really good about getting multiple runners into the box. I think RSL lose a lot of that without Ruiz, and it's in Houston, and Houston are going to be flying after what they did.
My only counter on the Ruiz stuff is that Nelson Palacio is likely to start. And again, usually the U22 initiative players, you don't heap a lot of expectation on them immediately. But Palacio's last game before he signed for Salt Lake was in the Colombian final for Atletico Nacional. And Real Salt Lake had a couple of staffers there who, again, the player that they were about to sign. So, of course, they were going to be optimistic. But they were like, unbiased, I think he was the best player on the field. And this is like, so he's no stranger to a big game. And again, he's not Pablo Ruiz and it's unfair to expect it to him. But like, that's a decently good option as a backup.
I just think this matchup fits Houston pretty well of like they like to have a lot of the ball at home. They're not super efficient, but this game feels like one where they're going to get a lot of chances because RSL is going to sit in, especially without Ruiz. Like Houston could have 60% possession in this one. And then you add in some of these guys who struggled to finish have finally finished.
Yeah.
Like, was it Quinones with the bike kick goal?
Yeah.
So he's had how many chances? You talked about Corey Baird.
Three goals, two assists in three Open Cup games for Corey Baird this year.
Yeah.
Legend.
Yeah. So this feels like a good moment and a good time for Houston. And also, this is probably it.
Yeah.
Even making the playoffs is the biggest thing for them. Yep. They're not going to win MLS Cup, most likely. So like you're in a semifinal. This is where you're putting your resources. Mm-hmm. I think RSL similar, but not exactly the same. Where they're looking at the season saying, like, can we settle without Ruiz? We're a Western Conference favorite.
I think RSL has already had a measure of success by getting this far in the Open Cup and having a strong regular season at the same time. And they got beat pretty good by Monterrey,
mm-hmm.
but then they turned around and did what they did against León. Like, mm-hmm. they've had, like, and Ruiz was central to all of that. It's just tough. I think Houston are big favorites here. And of course, Houston have history at home in the Open Cup. And Ben Olsen has history.
He wins a trophy year one.
Especially against RSL.
Yeah, true. If he wins a trophy year one, it is job well done. And for Houston,
even making the final.
Yeah.
If he makes the final of the Open Cup and make the playoffs, check two boxes for Ben Olsen.
Oh my God, yeah.
Then they have an open DP slot next year up top, replacing Ferreira.
They'd have a second DP spot then, too.
Yeah, it's true. Coco, which he just made me sad.
Hadabe is technically the third DP right now, I believe, and he can be bought down. At least they could have a lot of flexibility.
And for Pat Onsen, it would take a lot of the pressure off going into that. Do we know the final?
Do we know the hosting order for the final? No.
Not off the top of my head. No. Right. Sorry.
Well, we'll have that clear.
Well, no, on Wednesday. We will be back. Oh, well, actually, we won't because the semifinal is after.
Yeah. We record we'll talk about it next week.
But we will know that because we can look it up because I think it's
Google.com
out there.
Yeah.
So to everyone out there for listening, thank you.
Wait, we're not going to get to this Georgie Petrovich?
No, we are told we are already running long.
Okay.
Do you want to step into
go to Tom Bogart's Twitter?
We're now in
just follow Tom on
we're in Twitter. Anders Typhoon space now. I think typhoons are worse than hurricanes.
No, typhoons are
what?
Typhoons are Indian typhoon Ocean.
Yeah, they're the same
cyclone
thing.
Cyclone is Pacific Ocean.
Tsunami.
Hurricane. No, tsunami is a different.
Yes, yeah, tsunami. Whoa, tsunami is worse. We are in Anders Nami. We are in that territory, which means everyone get to high ground and hold on as tight as you can. Thank you to all of you out there for listening. Thanks to you too. For being here, shout out to everyone who's not here that normally hosts. I don't like you anymore. If you're not here right now, you're my B to G team, and I don't have anything else. So that's what you get. Thank you to Maria, who makes all this possible. We appreciate you. Less to Anders as well, and to everyone else who helped us out. And we will see you guys all again very, very soon. Bye.